hardball hitting with a baseball bat. Kick up your heels, kid, and leave them all flat. What does it mean to be American?
This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
Are American elections secure? Could the voting machines be hacked? Could another country interfere? And what are we doing to prevent cyber attacks on the election system and to convince the American public that our elections are, in fact, secure? Here to tell us all about why we should trust the administration of the upcoming election is Kim Wyman, the former Washington Secretary of State, former Senior Election Security Advisor for the Federal Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, and current Senior Advisor for the Elections Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. Kim, welcome to Democracy Optimist.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
So let's take care of one of the most prominent falsehoods that we hear when it comes to our elections. Are voting machines connected to the internet?
No, they are not. Air gapping is the standard that election officials across the country use to ensure that their tabulation systems are not on the internet or connected to any external networks.
Okay, great. And let's be clear, the voter registration check-in system might be connected to the internet, right? So when you go to check in, they might have a tablet that ensures you're there. And that also is a security measure, so you can't go somewhere else, right?
That's correct. The whole idea of voter check-in in places that have same-day registration, for example, you want to have a security measure that makes sure that a voter couldn't go to five or six polling places on election day and have their ballot counted if it was cast more than once. So yes, that's a security measure.
Okay, good. So why do you think this myth, and I've heard it a lot, I know secretaries of state have heard it. Here in Kentucky, our secretary of state has given the same answer. No, they're not connected to the internet. Why do you think that myth has persisted?
Well, I think, first of all, this idea of a bad actor altering tabulation system software has really been used as an example of how an election could be rigged since we started using computers in the 1980s to tabulate ballots. So over the last 40 plus years, election officials have really been building out physical and cybersecurity measures to make sure that they can counter those claims of tampering. And I think really the myth of insecure voting machines gained a foothold after the 2016 and 2020 elections, when we saw false news stories on, quite frankly, state-run news channels by foreign actors appeared on, you know, online on social media. And then those were passed on and amplified, sometimes by the bad actors, sometimes by Americans. And then after a while, that foreign malign influence campaign really took a foothold. And I think that some of those lies that were started became facts for many, many voters. And it's a problem now because I think we have a large swath of Republican voters who do believe that our voting system was hacked and that ballots were changed.
And let's just put that out there, by the way, of course, as Secretary of State, you were a partisan, you were a Republican Secretary of State in the state of Washington. So you're telling your fellow party members that these elections are secure.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that comes from 30 years experience doing the work at the local level and the state level, and really seeing the security measures that are built in for polling place voting, for mail-in voting, for absentee voting, for early voting, and knowing the great measure and length that election officials go to secure our elections.
So let's talk a little bit more about election security. You mentioned 2016. There were issues in 2016 with security. We hear about Russian hacking and Russian interference. Tell us the facts versus the myth.
Well, one thing that has certainly been proven over the last 8 years is Russian government-backed groups did many things in 2016 in U.S. elections. They, first of all, had a coordinated foreign malign influence campaign that was targeting U.S. election officials and offices, political campaign organizations, and quite frankly, American citizens. And it started with them scanning and trying to get into those systems. So in 2016, all 50 states voter registration systems were scanned, meaning they were trying to see if they could get in. And then one system was actually hacked, the Illinois State Board of Elections database. And really what they were trying to do, the Russians in particular, were trying to do was undermine confidence people had in our election system here in the United States. So they did things like hack and release campaigns, where they would go into a system like the Democratic National Committee system or the Clinton campaign. They got documents, they got emails, and they released them out on the internet. And these were things that were designed to make, quite frankly, the Democratic Party or the Clinton campaign look bad.
This is the WikiLeaks thing, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. WikiLeaks thing was part of it. And all of these tactics are really propaganda tactics that go back to the Cold War and before, where they're now able to use and leverage social media to divide Americans and influence our behavior or sentiment that might get an emotional response. For example, one of the things we saw in 2016 was protest, a Black Lives Matter protest at the same time in the same location as a pro-law enforcement rally, a pro-Trump versus a resist movement opposing rallies. And these were designed to set up that division and that divisiveness in Americans and get us on the 5 o'clock news yelling and screaming at each other. And so all of these things were amplified, and our adversaries were very effective in 2016 and have been since.
So I want to talk a little bit more about voting machines specifically, because there's a lot of discussion about, are the machines secure? I remember back when Mitt Romney ran for president, and there was discussions that he was, I guess, invested with one of the companies that makes voting machines. They're made by private companies. There's, two kind of primary companies that provide the machines to most states. So talk a little bit more about how states get the voting machines. Should we be concerned that private companies are the ones that are making them? And what should we know about them?
Well, first and foremost, we should have confidence in the voting machines that are used in the United States in elections, mostly because those machines are used by election officials across the country who conduct elections at the local level. So there are actually three primary voting systems that are in use in the United States: Dominion voting systems, Hardin or Civic, and election security, ESNS system.
Yeah. Sorry, I said two, I meant three, of course, because I think I forgot Hart in my mind.
No worries. And so these systems are created and certified at the federal level. Many of the companies do have independent lab tests by federally tested labs that are validating the security and the safety of those systems. And then those systems are actually purchased by the local or state election officials who run elections in each state. They go through competitive bidding processes, and most states have some sort of requirement for not only federal certification, but a state certification. So these systems are tested well before they are employed by an individual local voting office. And then once they're employed, there are multiple layers of physical and cybersecurity that are used to check that system and make sure not only that it hasn't been compromised in any way, but that as you're going through the process, start to finish in an election, at every step of the way, you're validating the things you're seeing from the machine. For example, the number of votes cast by individual voters in a polling location matches the number of ballots that were counted by that machine.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the certification process? So, the federal government, the Election Assistance Commission has standards. Many states have their own standards. What actually happens before an election, before the voter goes in and sees that machine and casts their ballot there?
Well, certainly, like I said, before they're ever selected by a local jurisdiction, they're federally and probably state certified. But the election officials on the ground in our local communities are, first of all, following common procedures to protect voting, to protect those voting systems. So they are, first of all, making sure that they are programmed according to their local laws and regulations. They're doing testing before, usually before and after, but sometimes even during the election, to make sure that the machines are accurate. Oftentimes they're using logic and accuracy tests, for example. All of this is publicly observable. Once they conduct the elections, there are bipartisan teams that are processing ballots or working at the polling places and issuing ballots to voters. Again, all of those processes are observable by the public. And then there's auditing and checks and balances that are happening throughout that process every single day to make sure that the election officials can account for any ballots that have been turned in by voters that are in the process of being getting ready to tabulate, and that there's a strict chain of custody that's being followed by those election workers. And usually there are bipartisan teams. In some states, that's difficult because you might have a very red state or a very blue state, and it might be difficult to get a representative from both parties. But like a bank, a dual control environment always exists. So there are multiple layers of security that is sort of a defense in depth strategy that election officials employ to use those voting machines.
All right. So we can trust the machines. But you have said that there is a security concern for 2024, and that's the election workers and the number of election workers who know how to do this, how to use the machines, how to test them, especially with the large turnover of election officials. So tell us about that concern and what states and localities are doing to address it.
Well, going back to kind of the premise of election security, one of the security measures is that you have a zero trust environment. So even people who are working on the election are not trusted in any part. So everything is always a check and balance. So new people coming into the system are going, like anyone that's working in an election office, is going to have a level of security and access that goes with whatever job they're doing. So for example, when I was county auditor, I did not have access to the tabulation equipment because my job didn't need me to tabulate ballots. I had staff to do that. And that was actually a security measure too, because we didn't even want the appearance that me, a partisanly elected official, could have some sort of influence over the tabulation of ballots. So what we've seen in the last 4 years is a bit of an uptick in people leaving the election profession. This is part of a larger 20-year trend. We've seen turnover of election officials from presidential election to presidential election increase over the last 20 years. And it's grown in the last four from about 28% to about 40%. And this increase is a little bit alarming. And so what I think alarms most of us is just the learning curve that election administration has. It takes about 4 years to really become a seasoned professional and understand all of the subtleties of the complex process each election has. So that's kind of the bad news, and the challenge is learning new systems, learning all of those security measures, and making sure you're doing each of them well each election. The good news in our study at the Bipartisan Policy Center, however, is that most of the election officials who are coming into those top spots, like the chief election official at a county or a municipality, has previous election experience. So we are seeing experienced people moving up the ranks, which is good, but they still have a learning curve.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I want to talk a little bit more about your role with CISA, the federal agency, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. You were a senior election security advisor there after your time as Secretary of State of Washington. What does that agency do, and how does it protect our elections?
Well, CISA is an agency that is really charged with securing the physical and cybersecurity of anything that is critical infrastructure. So that would be our nation's power grid. It would include our dams and anything that really is a national security threat if something adverse happened to it. So in 2017, President Obama and then President Trump designated elections as critical infrastructure. So we were able to work at CISA with election officials directly and bring all of the resources that the federal government has to those small and medium-sized jurisdictions, as well as the large ones, to help them secure their physical infrastructure, so their warehouses and their election offices and polling places, from threats that, you know, would be insider threats to someone coming in and maybe an active shooter or just somebody disrupting a polling place. How do you secure all of that infrastructure? And then, of course, on the cybersecurity side, the same thing. How do you secure your systems that are connected to the internet, your voter registration system and services for the public to be able to get information about elections, your website? And so CISA really brings that technical level of expertise to election officials to help them take stock of their physical and cybersecurity, to have experts in both cybersecurity and physical security come on site and do evaluations and trainings that are going to make the systems of the election workers resilient to all of the threats that they're facing. And they are facing many threats every single day. I really enjoyed my time at CISA because the things that we could do to help level the playing field for that that county election official in Washington State. I always like to use Heidi Hunt in Adams County, Washington, because she had two people on her staff, and ultimately she's having to protect her system against Russia and China and the kid in his parents' basement in the middle of Iowa who are trying to attack her systems. And so we were able to bring a lot of resources and help them make plans to be more resilient and be able to respond to those threats.
So you've seen the inside in terms of the kinds of threats that are facing our election system, whether it's from foreign countries, or as you said, the kid in his basement in Iowa. It sounds like a pretty doom and gloom that there's all these things out there, yet this is a show called Democracy Optimist. So are you optimistic about voting and elections in spite of everything that you've seen working as Secretary of State and with this agency?
Oh, absolutely. I spent 30 years as an election official, and I loved every single moment of it, even those hard days when people are yelling and screaming and accusing you of rigging an election. The work is very rewarding, because I think I can speak on behalf of election officials across the country when I say it's never lost on us that representative democracy is in our hands, and we are the stewards of making sure that every eligible American has the opportunity to cast a ballot, to register to vote, and choose who's going to lead their local and state and national government. And it's something that what gives me hope and gives me optimism is the, 10,000 plus election officials across the country that lead these offices. And they're doing this work sometimes as a partisanly elected official, sometimes as an appointed official, but it's always with the representation of their local community in mind, front and center. And they know that they need to make sure that they're counting votes accurately, they're securing those votes, and they're making that process as accessible to every eligible voter as possible. And I have had the great honor to meet thousands of these officials through my career, and now in these years after being one of them and seeing the work they're doing on the ground. And that's what gives me optimism, because our elections are local. They're run in communities across the country. They're not run by some election czar in Washington, D.C. They're run by our neighbors and our friends.
That's really great and really inspiring. Last question that I ask all of the guests here: why should people vote? What's the point? Especially sometimes it feels like your vote won't really make a difference. So why should people vote?
Well, one of the beautiful parts about American democracy is this idea of representational government, and that you as a citizen get to pick who makes governmental decisions on your behalf. And the irony, I think, of U.S. elections is that in presidential years, the largest number of voters show up and vote and cast a ballot. And in many ways, the president, while they may get you very, you know, angry or happy, depending on who's president and which side of the aisle you're on, at the end of the day, the president really doesn't affect your daily life as much as your local election official or your local elected officials, like your mayor or your city council or your school board. And ironically, those are the elections that most Americans don't participate in and are the elections that have the lowest turnout. So my pitch to everyone listening is know the power of your own vote and your own voice. And every time you cast in a ballot, particularly in a local election, you're making your local community better and you're making your government more representative of you. And that's why you should participate.
Kim Wyman is a senior advisor for the Elections Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, focusing in particular on election security. Her bottom line: we can trust the administration of the 2024 election. Kim, thanks for joining Democracy Optimist.
Thank you.
Josh, with so much discussion going on about election security, it's useful to understand the kinds of voting equipment that we use and how they are tested and certified. What can you tell us?
Yeah, and the voting equipment we have today is very different from when we were kids. You know, I remember being younger and joining my mom to vote, and there was this big machine with levers and a curtain that would close behind us while she voted. But things are a lot different today. After the close 2000 presidential election, with lots of questions about the voting processes in Florida and other places, Congress passed a law, the Help America Vote Act of 2002, that provided money to states for new voting machines. Most states moved to one of two kinds of machines: direct recording electronic, or DRE, voting machines, or optical scan paper ballot systems. With a DRE voting machine, the voter selects their candidates on a touchscreen. In most places, the machine then prints out the voter's selections on paper for the voter to verify their choices before the ballot is scanned in for counting. Some places used to have the machine count the votes, but there was no paper trail. And now most jurisdictions that use DREs have what experts call a voter-verified paper audit trail that provides a paper backup. The other most common system is an optical scan paper ballot. The voter selects their candidate by filling in an oval or completing an arrow corresponding with their preferred candidate, which the voter then feeds into an optical scanner to count. Again, this method offers a paper trail in case of a recount. Best practice says that there should always be a paper trail, but that the machines should tally the votes. Machines are a lot better at this kind of rote activity, and studies show that hand counting introduces human error. Plus, these machines go through vigorous pre-election testing and post-election audits. The Federal Election Assistance Commission, a federal agency that Congress created as part of the 2002 Help America Vote Act, has adopted standards for certifying voting machines. Although those standards are voluntary, most states use them or have their own similar standards. Election officials test the machines to ensure their security, functionality, privacy, usability, and accessibility. Now, many of the machines are quite old, so Congress should allocate money to states to update their systems. But we can be confident that with numerous checks, the voting machines for the 2024 election will be secure.
It's all really interesting and reassuring. Thanks for that. And what about voters with problems with mobility, vision, hearing, other impairments? How are they accommodated at the polls?
Yeah, that can be a problem for voters with disabilities because polling places have separate voting machines for these voters. And sometimes the poll workers haven't turned them on in the morning, or voters have to wait a long time to get them up and running. Dr. Juan Gilbert, a computer scientist at the University of Florida, has called this system separate but equal, where voters with disabilities have to use a different system to vote. That's why he and his team created a voting machine known as Prime 3. The ballot marking device is designed to accommodate all voters, regardless of mobility, vision, hearing, or other impairments. Any voter, regardless of ability or disability, can use the same voting machine. The machine uses a touchscreen tablet, and voters can decide how to use it, speaking, touching with headphones, or through other means. The system also provides a printout of the voter's selection and has enhanced security. His technology has been used in actual elections in New Hampshire and Ohio. For his efforts, Dr. Gilbert was awarded the National Medal of Technology and Innovation in a ceremony at the White House. He's now working on the next iteration of this technology.
What if we still have questions about the security of voting machines? Where can we find more information about this?
I encourage listeners to visit the Election Assistance Commission's website on the topic. Go to www.eac.gov/voters/election-security. There you'll find lots of resources, including videos that explain election security measures. I particularly like the graphics on the link, Voting System Security Measures.
Okay, and we'll put that website live so you can link to it on our website. Just go to esweku.org and click on the Democracy Optimist tab, and then find the interview with Ms. Wyman. Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas, writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm Tom Martin, your series producer. Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Mason Graber and Stephen Dabney, research assistants. Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer. Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. Democracy Optimist is a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions for Richmond, Kentucky-based public radio station WEKU.